Welcome to the This Is Life interfaith panel for today. My name's Hugh Chilton. I'm a fourth year history student and the president of the Evangelical Union. And it's my great pleasure to welcome you along today for what I think is the first event of its kind, certainly in the last few years at Sydney University. The Evangelical Union is a group of around 700 students on campus who get together to find out more about the big questions of life and particularly about what the Bible has to say about life, death and the universe. So we're really glad that you could join us today. We're looking forward to having some rigorous and fruitful discussion together. We've got a great panel lined up and look forward to having some good chats around our tables today. I just draw your attention to the slips of paper on your table. They're just a little slip letting you know what's happening over the next 3 weeks as we run events across campus every day, 12 till 2 p.m., events asking the big questions of life and engaging with what the Bible has to say about life. It'd be great if you could fill out the form at the top of that slip. Just let us know you are here today and any questions you have or anything you'd like to find out about Jesus or about the Evangelical Union, please do fill that out and pop that in the green buckets as you head out after this session or at 2 p.m. We will be having afternoon tea after the 2 p.m. session, so please do stay and join us for that. And if you'd like to find out more about the EU or grab some resources, please do pick them up there. That'd be great. Also, the New Testament, that blue book on your table, that's for you to take away if you'd like to read out more about Jesus. So please do feel free to grab one of those copies. That's about enough from me, though. I'd like to hand over to Lee McMunn, who's visiting us for these 3 weeks at the This Is Life campaign. He's going to be facilitating our interfaith panel today. So thanks very much, Lee.
Thank you very much for that round of applause. All I have done is walk from one seat to stand up, so thank you for that. Let me welcome you to this forum today. I think it is a great joy to see you, and I hope you are looking forward to hearing what some different religions and worldviews have to say. Often at the popular level, we never really hear from the religions themselves. We often hear what other people think about the religions. But I think one of the great things we have today is we have a representative from different religions or worldviews to come and to explain to us some of the big things that they believe in their religion. So I'm looking forward myself to learning. I hope you are today. The format, let me just tell you how this is going to work. In each hour, we're going to hear from three religions or worldviews. In the first hour, we're going to hear from Christianity, from Islam, and from atheism. And then in the second hour, and I encourage you to stay behind if you can, we're going to hear from Buddhism. We're going to hear from Islam and Christianity again, but not the same thing. It'll be slightly different. And the format will be that each presenter will speak for about 8 minutes, and then you will have an opportunity on your tables to chat about some of the things that they have said to us on your table groups. So your time of discussion will be about 6 to 8 minutes. So you might want to scribble stuff down as they speak, things that you want to talk about around the tables. Now, once again, we'll aim to finish about 5 minutes before the hour, just in case you have to go. Now, who is who? Let us see if I can introduce them properly. Towards the wall is Mohammed Assoum. He is a fourth-year Bachelor of Science student here at the University of Sydney. He is currently the Interfaith Coordinator of the Muslim Students Association of Australia, and is the PR and Interfaith Director of the Justice and Arts Network. Have I got that right so far? Whew. He was also a Muslim rider in Peddling for Peace, an interfaith cycling journey from Sydney to Melbourne. Is that right? And there's more, if you want to discover more about him, come back in the second hour, because I've kept a little bit back. Now, the man closer to me in the fashionable clothing is Ian Powell. Ian works with an organization called City Bible Forum, which seeks to present the claims of Jesus to people working in the city business district. He's previously worked as a senior minister at St. Barnabas Broadway. He has worked as an Anglican chaplain here at the University of Sydney and as a chaplain at Shore School. And he is up first. So would you put your hands together and welcome him to the stage.
Oh. Okay, I've got a little clock here because we're trying to be disciplined with the time. It was supposed to give me 8 minutes, but it's given me 1 hour and 8 minutes, so that's fun. In terms of worldviews, it seems to me that it's fairly clear that we all have a worldview, that is a way of viewing the world, and many of us are unconscious of it. One of the things when you take up a minority position, as I did when I was 19 and becoming a Christian, is you become aware of how your worldview is different to that of the dominant voice in our culture because you keep hearing things assumed that you don't assume. I'm also conscious, as one of the reasons I do the work I do now, that many very intelligent, well-educated people, their understanding of Christianity is often a total misunderstanding. So I thought in these few minutes I'd give you, under six questions, the sort of the guts of what I think the Christian worldview is. Mohammed and I are both saying it's terribly hard to do it any justice in a short time, but let's give it a go so you've got time to discuss. So, six questions that all worldviews have a go at answering. The first one is this: how do we know what is real or true or ultimate? How do you get access to that? We all have opinions about it, perhaps unarticulated. How do you get access to that which is ultimately true? The Christian answer is Jesus' answer. He is the window. So one of the statements that led to Jesus' death was this statement from John chapter 8. Listen to what he says about himself. I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. Jesus does not claim to be a light of the world. I think very few of us would be troubled by that. It's the placing of that other, the definite article that is troublesome. He says, I am the light of the world. He says that I was born to bear witness to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth, he says, listens to me. So Christians are people who've come to the verdict. We all come to a verdict about Jesus one way or the other, that he is speaking the truth when he makes those huge claims to himself. When asked a number of times by his contemporaries, where is his evidence or proof that that was the case, every single time that I'm aware of, and the examples that are obvious are in John 2 and Matthew 12, he speaks about tear apart this body and in 3 days' time I will rebuild it. So he says you can actually address your mind to an historical event that is coming in his day and is now past. What's our access to reality, according to Jesus, or according to the Christian? It's Jesus and what he says, not what I feel or what my society tells me. Secondly, why is there something and not nothing? It's a famous philosophical question. Why is there something and not nothing? That is, what is ultimate? What is eternal? What is the source of everything else? So you open up Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, the very beginning of the Bible, and it says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. You open up John, one of the four Gospels written by an eyewitness of Jesus' life, and it begins like this. In the beginning was the Word. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the very beginning with God. Without him, nothing was made that has been made. So what Christians say is this, based on what Jesus says about himself. The source of everything is not energy, which is what you're driven to if you're an atheist. That in the end, ultimate reality is just energy which has come out of who knows where, 15-something billion years ago. But the teaching of Jesus is this, that the source and background to everything is actually God. Christians love the Big Bang Theory. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. But we don't just believe in, as it were, a lonely, solitary monad. But what Christians were driven to by the teaching of Jesus was this difficult, but we understand truthful belief that actually is not just a sort of an isolated God, but the Trinity. That there are three people who make up the one God. Now, when I was young, I used to mock that. It was both ignorant and arrogant. It's easier to mock something complicated and say, oh, it's too complicated. Let me give you a simpler idea. As if because something is complicated, it's false, and because something is simple, it's true. That's ridiculous. Quantum mechanics is absurdly complicated and is full of nonsense, at least when you first hear it. In fact, the founders of quantum physics said, when you first hear quantum physics explained, if you don't think it's nonsense, you don't understand it. Because that's the way reality often is. We understand that because of what Jesus teaches and does, that at the back of everything is God, a trinity, a community of love, which has accidentally enormous philosophical and psychological implications. that our sense that people are more important than stuff is actually grounded in ultimate reality. If you are a consistent atheist, ultimate reality is bare, emotionless, purposeless energy. And as one atheist philosopher has said, persons are just scum on the pool. If that's true, live by it. Why is there something and nothing? Because there is there's a triune God at the heart of everything. Therefore, love and people really do ultimately matter. Thirdly, what's gone wrong with the world? You have. Or more fairly, I have. We are all a funny mishmash now of the goodness that God has created us with, but also deep evil. It's what the Bible calls sin. The proof of it is read the papers. It's just obvious that our problem really is not that we don't know what it is to be good. We are incapable of consistently being good. It's an obvious problem. What's wrong with the world? Individual human rebellion against the inconvenience of living in somebody else's world. Oh, we make up gods often, gods that are strange reflections of ourselves, or we just have ourselves as our god, as National Mutual used to say, for the most important person in the world, you. They don't believe that. They think they're the most important, but I think if they convince you that you are the most important, you'll put your money with them. What's wrong with the world? We are. Fourthly, what's the answer to the problem? All worldviews have to have and do have some sort of a, this is the way forward. What's the answer to the problem of human evil and selfishness and guilt? Jesus is the answer to that. In particular, the death of Jesus, which is the central reality proven by any number of historical sources, Jewish, Roman, Christian, etc. That Jesus Christ died, and that is the most beautiful and the most magnificent thing God has ever done in the universe. Through it, we get forgiveness, peace with God, and a just peace with God. God has dealt with sin. But also, we get a heart transformation. When you see how much God loves you, you cannot help but answer love with love. It transforms the heart. The answer to the problem is the death of Jesus. What is the good life? Is the fifth and second last question. What is the good life? How do you live well? Well, very briefly, you live a Jesus-like life. You love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. You love your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus says, big deal if you're good to your friends. He says, the worst sinners in the world are good to their friends. Love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Pray for those who mistreat you. If you have been forgiven by God, you will forgive the sins of others against you. Live like Jesus. That's the good life. It's a graceful life. And lastly, what is ultimate destiny? Where are you heading? Well, of course, obviously to death, but also to Jesus. In Acts chapter 10, Jesus tells the apostles that they are to go to the world. This is the resurrected Jesus. And they are to tell all people that God has appointed him as judge of the living and the dead. In the end, on the great day of judgment, according to Jesus, John 5, and according to the apostles, you will meet Jesus. And ultimately, heaven is for those who have received the forgiveness of God, will confront him in judgment, and will be welcomed, much to our ongoing surprise, to be with him forever. That's the base of the Christian worldview, answering those six questions. And you might like to discuss, what do you find enticing or challenging about the basics of the Christian worldview? Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for that, Ian. I'm not going to summarize what he said. I think he's been quite clear on six questions. You might want to focus in on one of them, but why not take a few minutes around your tables to discuss some of what Ian has said.